Welcome to the Restoration Church podcast, Behind the Sermon, where we get to sit in on a conversation between our pastors and hear about what they're learning, what they're teaching, and what God is doing throughout our church. Enjoy the podcast.
Why, hello and welcome to the Behind the Sermon podcast. I'm Pastor Nate, joined here with Pastor Stephen.
Hey.
And we're going to talk through week four of the Soul series. We can talk through the entire series as well if you want. Pastor Stephen, it's good to talk with you today. Easter's on Sunday. We had a meeting last night with all the locations together.
Yeah.
Just a quick reminder of what we're doing, why we're doing it, how God's going to use us. And it's going to be a big deal. Could potentially be the largest church service we've ever had in our church's history. It's not about that. It's not just about getting larger, but it's about reaching people with the gospel. And we're doing that. And we're going to see that again this Sunday. So I am pretty excited.
Me too. Yeah. It's going to be fun. It's special for us. We are hitting 1 year mark.
1 year. Easter.
Yep. 1 year mark. And I'm pretty pumped and excited. Just looking through what God has done in this church. Restoration testimonies coming up of how it was timely, perfectly aligned, opening this church here. It's special. It's special for me and the church. Yeah. I'm excited. I'm pretty pumped to see what God will do for all of us, all the campuses. So pretty stoked.
Yeah.
One question for you. What excites you the most? Like anticipating the Easter is a Sunday. What excites you the most as a lead pastor, like over the years?
Two things that excite me the most. One, seeing who shows up from the people we invited. Because you never know. People will tell you they're coming and they don't show up, and that's always disappointing. But seeing who shows up, and then the people who come in the lobby and whisper to me or like tell me they get there ahead of time. Hey, my daughter's coming. My son's coming. My grandchild's coming. My neighbor's coming. I had someone text me after church on Sunday. Someone moved across the street that I used to work with. They're coming to church on Sunday. That's my favorite thing. That's my favorite thing. It, just because Easter's a holiday and people were like, oh, Easter, sure, I'll go to church. We end up with more of those stories than normal. So instead of like one a week or two a week, it turns out it's like 20.
Yeah.
So it's just so exciting. And then the next thing is the anticipation of, you know, the worship time. It's like, okay, God, help me to be clear. Help me to give your word. Help me to present you. Help me to help people meet you. And then just waiting to see who's gonna have their life changed, who's gonna follow Jesus. So that's what I'm most excited about.
That's awesome. Yeah, praying with you for people to be saved and just to see people come together, you know, it's exciting. Like, as you mentioned, a lot of people, it's like, oh, it's Easter Sunday. So nobody like say no to people when they invite or, you know, things like that. So it's nice. Is any of your family members or anyone you invited coming?
Well, at this point, I don't think so. I did have some family start attending the church around Christmas Eve. So they've been coming since Christmas Eve. So that's a win. So I don't know how much of the family will show up for Easter. I invited someone at Tractor Supply over the weekend who came to the church like maybe 8 years ago. They didn't seem to respond super well. So we'll see. We just never know what happens in someone's heart over the days to come. So I don't know. I don't know if any of them will come.
Cool. Good stuff.
Yeah. Well, we've got the soul week four to talk through, and we can talk through the entire service. But I wanted to ask you a question for Stephen, Pastor Stephen, because you've said a few, you've said a bunch of comments to me, like messages on Slack, and you said it in the meeting last night. But you've said positive things about this series. And I was wondering, what made the series stand out to you? What made these messages or parts of the messages stand out to you?
Yeah, I was checking my notes. So especially, I never thought about my soul so much in a way that we're, how we are going through right now. So when we started this series, it was kind of like a big shifting moment for me and my life. Because growing up, we heard sermons, good sermons and things like that. But we always knew our souls are connected, or, you know, if you sin, our souls, you know, we won't get to heaven. We were disconnected and all that stuff. But this series, it was more than that. It's not like, oh, if you sin, you know, God is going to, you know, you're disconnected from God. It was beyond that. And I'm like, wow, I never thought through things in my soul. Like even this week, right? This week in your sermon, you mentioned like downcast of your soul. Like you, everything might be going right, but you don't know what is happening. That spiritual emptiness, or like that wilderness, like you don't know what is happening. You know, like we've talked about it a few couple of weeks ago, and exactly what I mentioned, I don't know what is happening. Like, I don't know what is happening, but I know there is like, and this week you mentioned something. It was kind of like really, when you mentioned it, it was hard for me. Like you said, God intentionally moves out from you. Like you, I'm paraphrasing it, but your words were different. You said like God chooses to move away so that, you know, it's not like whenever things are happening, it's we depend on him, but he wants us to depend on every step. So even that, like that, just that one line, yeah, God just moves off from you. I was like, what do you mean? Like God moves off from me? Like for me, I was like questioning. I was like, what do you mean? Like really? Like God just moves off? And then you teaching that, like it's just an open perspective for me. I was like, wow.
I think at first we think, well, God's mean, God's a jerk. But if you think about it from a parenting perspective, right? And you've got, obviously you've got those three kids of yours, causing shenanigans over in Bethlehem.
Yes, sir.
But when you're teaching your daughters to walk, you, at first you're like 3 inches from them, and then you start tricking them. You start walking backwards while they're walking forwards because you're teaching them, you're training them. When you wean the baby is heartbroken, right? You're teaching the baby how to survive. You teach the kid how to bathe themselves, take care of themselves, live on their own. And God doesn't obviously want us to live on our own, but he's teaching us how to not have a superficial faith, but to have a deep, enduring faith that will survive persecution, that will survive grief, trauma, oppression, even great success, right?
Right.
And that is a series that we have coming up later in the year, 6 types of tests that God gives us. And testing you know, I think we all would like to believe that we would receive martyrdom for our faith. Like we wouldn't reject Jesus, but we'd endure even to death. But there's no way to know that. But
right,
in you can kind of have a sense depending on the test that you've walked through. So hopefully my family, hopefully no one in our church ever gets put in that position when they have to choose death or Jesus.
Yeah.
But when you defend your faith against mockers, when you share your faith, when you miss out on promotions because of your faith, I think you've got a sense that I'm willing to lay down everything.
Right. Yeah. You know, even now, like you putting that kid's perspective, right? It is so, even like you, it's speaking life to me right now. Just, yeah. So yeah, the whole series has been just awesome in my life, personally, in my family's life. We know that we are experiencing that every week. And I know even a couple of people in Bethlehem said, oh, it is sad this is over. So I mentioned it to one of the believers. Now we got part two coming. So they're like, oh, nice. But like, yeah, soul caring is not talked more. I think even generally in the culture too, like I never heard, I've been living in the United States for 8 years now. I never heard like soul caring, like too much about it. Like it's like more kind of like the physical and all that, but soul caring is such an important aspect of your spiritual journey. And like also physical, like if your soul is not in a healthy place, you're just beat down. You walk defeated, you know, you're not joyful, you know, so I think this was kind of like a turning point. I know for sure for me, I'm not ashamed to admit it, for me too, just, wow, gotta take care of your soul in a much, much better way. Not just, all right, praying, check, reading devotional, check. Not that, more than that, there is a sense of care that we need to give to our soul, that God also wants us to take care of it, you know? So, yeah.
Why, give me your thoughts on why you think it resonated with the church so much. So you had Bethlehem crew talking to you. I had someone from Plymouth message me probably every week, people from Dover, people on staff, people from Milton, a lot of people. Mm. Yeah, people from Milton messaged me on Sunday. So a lot of people communicating about this. You think it's the same reason? You think there's additional reasons? Why did it hit?
I think, you know, the answer, the stuff that I just shared, I think it's not talked often in our culture, in this culture. Like, it's not brand new idea. Soul care is not like a brand new idea, but it's been there. But I think maybe we are hearing it for the first time, or we are like hearing this perspective for the first time, you know? So I think that is what resonating with a lot of people. Like, wow, like we've heard like soul care and all that, but not in a way how it is broken down as you did for last few weeks. I think that is what is hitting the most. Also the idea of like, it's not just check, like, oh yeah, we are praying as a family. Yeah, good. But more than that, there is a soul care that we need to do as an individual. So I think even that, one of the believers from Bethlehem, they said like, yeah, like we do all the stuff, but this was different. This is like, you go, you search your innermost thoughts, innermost life. Like, hey, oh, I'm not I'm not going to any illegal like websites or like watching something or magazines or anything, but is there anything in your deep down, you know? So those were the comments that people were saying, all right, now I'm self-analyzing. Is there anything that in my innermost being, like I'm doing that I'm not aware of? So I think those are the facts maybe resonating with the people. And it was a nice teaching, right? For the whole church. Because I think for a lot of us, it just broke that mentality. And it was like, God, even this week you preached like as a deer pants for the water, right? Is like, I started asking questions. God, is my soul really like hungry for you? Is it hungry that I can leave everything and just sit in your presence? Like as deer searches for it. Like it's not like rivers are flowing and they're just, you know, licking and drinking from it. No, they search and go for the streams of water. So is my soul searching more of you, God? Like is my soul hungry for the word and stuff like that? So I think, yeah.
I think everybody's soul is hungry for it, but we can feed it with the wrong things. So you can be starving and then you eat Oreos and your body's still starving, right? You're deficient of every vitamin that you need, but you don't feel the hunger anymore, though you're still starving. And I think our souls can be starving, but we're feeding it with a bunch of things that don't actually sustain it. And so then it creates all these other deficiencies in our life.
Wow, that is that is good. Write it down.
I had a few thoughts. One, there's the old church hymn, It Is Well With My Soul. And I didn't share it this series because I feel like I've shared it recently. But that guy sends his wife and his daughters over on a ship overseas and only his wife survives. And so obviously it's olden days. So it takes him a long time to get the letter, the telegraph. So then he travels by ship to meet his wife in Europe. And when he crosses the ocean near where the ship sank, he writes that song, it is well with my soul. And I think we sing that, but I don't know that it clicks, right? It's one of those things that we always say, but we don't always like, well, is it well within my soul? Other than it being a beautiful song, what is really going on? And is our soul hungry, but we have been feeding it with other things? And I wrote this question down, are we purposely neglecting our souls? And I'm not sure that we are, but I think one thing that's different and why this resonated more than it probably would have resonated in the 80s when I was growing up is because our lives are so different, even from 30 years ago, 40 years ago. Because think about, we've talked about this before, but the link between our mental health and social media. So social media is it's a daily soul decay. And then when you scroll, I mean, it's just barraging your soul. You're comparing, you're envious, you're lusting, you're coveting, you're bitter, you're angry, and this is on a daily basis that we're filling ourselves up with it. Another thing I think, you know, when people talk about self-care, I talked earlier about how self-care is actually, I feel like it's destructive. We need to be thinking about soul care, but a self-care practice would be binging a TV show. So let's binge a TV show and stay up till 3 a.m. watching episode after episode. Now listen, I binged TV shows before. But you do that for 6 or 7 hours And there's certainly a time and a place. There's nothing wrong with being on the couch forever, but that's our culture right now. It is binge. So we used to make fun of people who watch TV all the time. And I think we still do, but we just lie. We're like, I don't watch TV. Yeah, well, because you're binging TV shows on Netflix and you've convinced yourself that you don't watch TV, but yeah, you've got 8 hours of screen time a day and that decays our soul. I think because trauma has increased, more and more people have experienced their parents getting divorced. They've grown up in a single household. They've experienced physical, emotional, sexual, and even spiritual abuse. So much of that we're all starting in a deficit. We have so many of us have sedentary jobs. So we sit down all the time. We go home, we sit down all the time. And 7 million men in our culture aren't even working. So their soul, that's decaying their soul because they have no purpose, no worth. They're making no impact.
Yeah.
I mean, the sexual promiscuity that is in our culture, homosexual, the way that is so forthright, transgender, the way that's so forthright, all those things just are decaying us. And more and more, right? We could keep going on. Yeah. We're in debt. We're buying houses that are too big. We're buying cars that are too expensive. We're putting kids in every sport. And we're buying them the best gear. Like, we're just continually putting pressure on ourselves, which is, again, I don't think we're purposely neglecting our souls, but we're neglecting it. And we are dying and our souls are panting for the living God and we're not giving it to it.
I like how you, again, right? Like all those things that you mentioned, we don't think it as a soul decay. Like at least for me, like I never thought about it until like we started this series, like, oh wow, like that can be something that is related to your soul. That's why it is coming out this way. Or like, and it is so important to try and check that off your life. All right, he's spending too much here. Something is wrong. You know, as you mentioned, the whole list, we can keep going. I think God really wants that, that friendship. We do life together. Like me and my wife, we do life together. We know everything about each other, you know, and I think God wants the same with us. Like he wants to know us and not like a, you know, checklist Christian, but to really have a deeper intimacy with us, to know the innermost thoughts or innermost, he knows it all, he's God, but he eagers for that.
Right.
What, like, obviously you wrote this whole sermon and the series, but is there something that resonates with you the most from last 4 weeks of preaching? Something really stood out in your studies and your walk?
Well, I
or
think
a favorite week? From,
yeah, I mean, I liked the story, the Bible, the people from the Bible that we talked about in the series. You know, it was kind of a bunch of no names and, you know, people don't really talk about, we know who Ahab is, we don't really talk about him. Ahithophel, no one ever talks about him. So I like that. I liked being able to share some of those stories. I think for me, it was from Sunday, that idea that 86,400 seconds of a day, how many of them do you spend with God?
Yeah.
And to me, that was the, God wants me to spend all of them with them, even when I'm sleeping, right? I want my sleep to be glorifying to God.
Yeah.
In the presence of God, no nightmares, no anxiety, no grinding my teeth.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of it, right? I want to be with God all the time. And I think something that I wanted to probably focus in on more, but I didn't get to it. But when I was dirt bike riding, I wasn't really being funny. I was singing that worship song as I was driving through the mountains, not the whole time, because I'd forget, or I'd almost crash, but definitely a few different times over the day. And I'd spend some time praying. So I was just riding on the dirt bike. God, what do you want me to talk about this Sunday? I feel like I've got so much I want to say. I don't know what direction to go. Help me out, speak to me, give me guidance, praying through different stuff that's happening in the church. I think there was that. Busy and Hurried was something that stood out to me this week, which I got from the John Ortberg book.
That was funny list. When you started talking to it, I was like, oh, that's a good list.
You can be busy and 100% connected to God, but you know the difference between busy and hurried. So even there was a adoption in the church today. So I was at the courthouse with the family. So the Baldigas finally were able to adopt Harmony. So I was able to celebrate that with them. At lunch after, some of the moms were talking, and one of them said, yeah, I got up at 4 this morning to avoid that. And it was in response to the other mom, where we're going to be late and you're yelling at everybody to move. So she's like, yeah, I got up at 4 in the morning to avoid that, right? That's the difference between busy and hurried. As soon as we're hurried, what happens? We lose our temper. We lose our cool. We misspeak to people. We're frantic. We're rushed. Our spouse tells us to calm down. And you're trying to create a little bit of margin. Yeah, we're busy, but I'm going to make sure I've got the time where I'm not one thing right to the next, that there's a chance to breathe there, even if it's 10 minutes between appointments.
So can you expound on, I think you mentioned in the sermon, when you're hurrying, it's a soul issue. It's a soul issue. How does it differ? Or maybe that might be a question. How can you expound it more? How hurriedness creates that in us?
Yeah. So
than the busy.
It said in the list that being hurried is spiritually draining, and because when you're hurried, you cannot take any time to just be with God, because you're rushing to drive. So you're not thinking, oh, let's listen to this worship song. Let's talk to God a little bit while we're driving. You're, why is this person driving so slow? Come on, why is the light turning red? And you're frantic, right? You're frantic the whole time. There's no space for God in that frantic mind, that frantic attitude. Right. And that's same, like, and because we're hurried, we can never be obedient to something God might be telling us to do. Mm. So it could be, you know, you got to run in the grocery store. You got to buy something. You got to get to that party. And God's like, oh, hey, go invite that person to Easter. But you can't even hear it because you're just screaming, come on, no, stop touching stuff. Put down the candy. We gotta go. Get back in the car. And you're like that. And so you have no space for God at all. Mm. And you, when you go to sleep at the end of the night, you're tired.
Yeah.
But you're not fulfilled. As opposed to like when you, you know, some days it's like a whole bunch of yard work and you go to bed fried. Like I probably shouldn't have done 12 hours of yard work, but you're physically tired, but you're fulfilled. Like, oh, I'm accomplished. And the hurried life never feels accomplished.
Wow. I'm writing stuff down as you're tired, but you're not fulfilled. That's a good one.
And then everybody's tired of you, right? They're tired of getting yelled at by you and irritable and people are avoiding you. They don't want to be around you. So everybody else is spiritually drained too because you're hurried and you just need to sit down and drink a cup of coffee for a little bit. Go take a walk through the yard and pick up a couple pine cones off the ground and let God bring you back to still waters.
Yeah, you mentioned maybe all of the weeks, I believe, or at least two, you know, being still in the presence of God.
I think it was the week two homework.
Yeah,
it was week two. Three times a week, be sit in silence for 5 minutes a day. So 15 minutes a week.
Right.
Silence, no phone, no TV, no radio, nothing, no white noise, just silent, whether it be outside or in your living room. Make a cup of coffee and just sit silent with God. And I never asked how many people did it. Right. It's probably impossible for some people. They probably tried it first week, made it 2 minutes, and that was it.
Yeah, I ask that question to my circles every week now, or even in the CERT team chats. I just ask them, hey, did you practice what is God being speaking to you? So, yeah, it's a good practice to have just even like you teaching through this, the concept of busy and hurried. For me, that's both. Same thing in my head, like, or right. Growing up, like we never differentiated that. It was just, all right, you're busy, you know, but like you teaching through that and having that list, I'm like, oh, that is new information, you know? So a lot of ways this series has been like a good, it's kind of like a good, somebody's poking you with a knife thing, but in a good way. Oh, wow. Like a wake up call. All right. The stuff that you didn't know, or like the stuff that maybe you didn't neglect, but it was not taught, you know? So, you also mentioned in your sermon, I cannot find it in your sermon notes, but maybe I'm not looking for it, but you mentioned the dark night of your soul.
Oh yeah, that was not in my notes.
That really spoke to me. That really, really spoke to me. Dark night of your soul. Can you expound on that more for our listeners? I think if I remember correctly, you mentioned you're in that valley or you're in that wilderness, but you know, God is, you're going through that, but you don't know what is happening to you or something along the lines of that. Like, is God teaching you? A lot of times, right? A lot of times when we go through that tough wilderness experience, we might think, all right, or we, when people see us, or it's like, oh, you must have done something wrong.
Yeah, there. I first heard Peter Scazzaro talk about it, and he talks about it quite a bit. And then I think I've heard John Mark Comer talk about it, and then John Ortberg talk about it. So the phrase comes from a Carmelite monk named John, who lived in Spain in the 16th century. He wrote a book called The Dark Night of the Soul, and it's an account of how God works to change us, not just through joy and light, but through confusion, through disappointment, and through loss. So it's, we have these experiences of suffering, but he says it's suffering in what feels like the silence of God. So when we're suffering and it feels like God's not answering. And
so will you say, like, the story of Job, is that a dark night of the soul?
Can you? I mean, I didn't read his book, but I would probably describe it that way, because he's asking God questions and God's really not answering him. God, why did this happen? How could you let this happen? And he's not getting an answer. In the book Soul Keeping by John Ortberg, he said this. He says, if you ask people who don't believe in God why they don't believe in God, the number one reason will be suffering. So how can a good God let bad things happen? How can there be suffering in the world if God's God? So people who don't believe in God, that's the number one reason. But if you ask people who believe in God, if you ask them when they grew the most spiritually, the number one answer will be suffering. Isn't that interesting? So when I'm suffering, it's when I will grow the most in my relationship with God. Mm. But also we say, well, I don't believe in God because suffering happens.
Mm. Yeah.
So there is a theology of suffering that we do tend to miss. And suffering is an opportunity for great spiritual growth. We don't want bad things to happen, but if we can trust God in them, good growth can happen. So go ahead.
Can we identify or like know, maybe I know the answer, but just for the listeners, can we identify God's sufferings and the other sufferings?
Well, I think all suffering God will use to help us grow, I think is.
Good point, yeah.
So let me say this.
Yes.
It says when we first start following Jesus, the soul often finds delight in devotional activities. We love to read the Bible. We hunger for worship. We long to pray. And that's what I was talking about. I go up to the altar every time. No one had to beg me to go there. I was the first one there. I was crying the whole time. I loved it. We may think this is a sign of our maturity. It is really more of a kind of honeymoon phase. There will come a time when God will bid them to grow deeper, which is what I experienced. So 6 months for me, and I just felt like, what's wrong with me? Why do I not feel God anymore? And nothing was wrong with me. God was trying to get me to grow my faith deeper. And so he had a little bit of suffering for me that he fabricated. So a little bit of cry. Hey, you're not going to cry. I'm not going to pour out my spirit upon you at the altar anymore. And so it was like a fake crisis, but it was a crisis for me as a 14-year-old.
Wow. Is that Soul Keeping book? Or different?
Yeah, that's a Soul Keeping book.
I'll get to it.
So he says, it's not this dark night of the soul, it's not the soul's fault. Of course, we could grow cold to God because of everything else we talked about in the series, but the dark night is God initiated. He's moved us. He's wanting us to grow deeper. And this is where, like, there's some spiritual practices that don't feed us anymore. It's probably the same thing as weightlifting. If you do bicep curls of 25 pounds an arm, well, eventually 3 reps of 10 doesn't make a difference anymore. and you either got to do more reps or you got to increase your weight. And God does that on our spiritual life as well. Like, no, there'll come a point, just attending service isn't going to grow you. You have to serve at service. There's going to come a point where just being a consumer of church isn't going to grow you. You have to be a giver. There's got to come a point where you're not just being fed by the sermon, but you're feeding yourself during the week. There's got to come a point where you're not a follower, but you're leading others. Where you're not just taking, but you're sacrificing. And we, and that's what happened. We like, we just, oh, these bicep curls aren't working anymore. I'm going to quit going to the gym. No, you need to get a trainer and a coach and have a goal and keep going after that goal and walking on that path. And we've got to flex new spiritual muscles and be stretched and allow God to stretch us.
Yo, that is so sick. Those, yeah, those are really good, good points. Good stuff. I think like you're preaching.
We are doing a second. Did I already say that this podcast? We are doing part two.
Yes.
I did say that, man.
You didn't. I did.
Oh, my mind. Yeah. Yeah. And end of June.
I'm excited, already excited. And I think like a lot of people are excited from yesterday's just conversations before the meeting started. People are excited. I think, yeah, it is relatable so much for the church and just individual growth, as you said, like even maturing in this, like your soul needs to be matured as well, right? Even that concept, like, yeah, God puts you through it. Either you go through it with that hungry heart or just like, all right, I don't care. Or maybe it's okay. I don't have to do it. So, yeah. Good one. I'm talking about this series.
Yeah, it was good. It was good.
Oh, boy.
So we've got to learn how to slow down.
Yeah.
How to slow down, how to be with God, how to hang out with God, how to be with God all day. And it doesn't mean that we're unproductive, because we're called to be productive. 6 days of the week, we should be highly productive. But not at the expense of our soul, and not neglecting to the point, our soul to the point of spiritual death, which so many are on the verge of and so many have experienced.
Right. Yeah. So true. So true. Good one.
Yeah.
I think our time is about there.
Is it? Man, what a conversation.
Yeah, it was good. I loved it.
The book I recommended on Sunday was All There by Dr. Gail Johnson. And it says, All There is about the soul of the leader and living and leading redemptively in the world. So another book on soul. I think I mentioned Ordering Your Private World, Soul Keeping. There's a book, Toxic Soul, which is primarily geared to pastors. And then any of the emotionally healthy books by Peter Scazzaro. But Emotionally Healthy Leadership is one that we recommend all the time. That was the one that I feel is the best of the bunch, but they're all good.
Peter Scazzaro one?
Yeah. Well, man, thanks for hanging.
Thank you so much, everyone. Love you.
Easter Sunday. See you then.